Blog Talk Radio.
Well, there you go. There you go. Another great week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and my name is Frank Stanishi. I'm with Aaron William Freeland. And coming soon, and he called before I had a chance to get him going, Gary Groove as well. And there's a rumor going around that Jared Harris will be showing up. And, yes, I have the pleasure of being with some really intense NLL fans, indoor box lacrosse. For those of you that are new to the game, it is lacrosse, and it is indoor, and it is with an Indian rubber ball, as is outdoors. You know, and I never asked that question. Is the ball different in indoor lacrosse than it is in outdoor lacrosse? Now, I used to do the Toronto Beaches lacrosse. I used to be the play-by-play guy for Rogers back in the day, and we're talking more than 20 years ago. So, you know, there aren't a lot of differences that can happen. The equipment, of course, has been upgraded. The players... As you all know, in all sports, the equipment, headgear, shoulder pads, all the kinds of protection that there are becoming harder, firmer, and safer for the players in as far as protecting them. Now, it has never been a problem in lacrosse that players are consider themselves missiles or basically the reason why people say you're in harm's way when you play lacrosse. It is a tough game. It is... Sometimes it seems more violent than it is. For those of you, again, that are just tuning in to us talking about lacrosse, there's a lot of swiping going on, a lot of slashing going on, and a lot of it is legal. And when it isn't, just like in any other sport, there is a penalty to be called. So anyway, let's get at her and introduce our guest hosts. First of all, Aaron William Freeland.
Heyo. How's it going, Frank?
Going fine, buddy. And
good to be back with you, bro.
Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. And coming in third, Gary Groob.
Hi, how you doing, Frank?
Good, man. All right, so now, for now, the other thing I'd like to mention is just like happened with the CFL show that we started, because I live in Mississauga, which is, you know, a kneecap away from... the big city known as Toronto, and because my contacts are mostly Toronto Rock fans, and that for now will appear to be the case that we talk about the Rock, but we will not talk about the Rock except to suggest that they're one of the teams in the LLL. Now, admittedly, Gary, you're a Rock fan, right?
I am.
Aaron, you're a Rock fan, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
And when Jarrett comes on, that'll make three Rock fans. Now,
the Roadie Connection, that's us.
There you go. And let's make this clear, folks. There is an open invitation for representation from the rest of the teams in the National Lacrosse League. And as happened in the CFL, after two seasons, in the middle of the second season, I had the good fortune of running into some other fans of other cities like BC, like Calgary, like Hamilton, Ottawa, Montreal, and such, Edmonton too. And so it became a little more interesting because it became more of a national discussion. So that's the point here. What we're trying to do is create a national talk forum for the National Lacrosse League and mostly their fans. Obviously, we'll talk about the games, but I'd like it to be, and the format that we use that I really promote is a coffee table format where we talk about the game, not only about, the intricacies of the game, but even some of the simple questions. Like, for example, let's see if we can stump the stars here, and we'll start with this question. Gary and Aaron, I'll say Gary first, is the ball in box lacrosse identical to the ball in field lacrosse?
No, I don't believe it is. Aaron?
No, wait, hang on. Aaron's. I asked you first because you can hear Aaron's keyboard going.
Off the top of my head, I don't believe
find
it
out,
is, but I'm not.
I don't think it is either, to be honest with you. But it may very well be. Now, needless to say, the field of play is totally different.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's a massive field comparative.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the ball will react differently on the grass than it will on the carpet-covered concrete or ice.
So will the player when you have an open field and lots of room to run around or boards to hold you in and you're about to be hit.
Right. And which brings us to the reason why we're here. We love field lacrosse. We think field lacrosse is great. But there's nothing as exciting as indoor box lacrosse. As I said, when I did the play-by-play for the Toronto Beaches, at that time, box lacrosse was relatively new. Not new, but relatively. I'm talking back in the 70s. And it was a total, wow, you know, wake-up call for me because of the speed, the agility of the players, and downright physical play that really is unmatched in any other sport. I don't think any other sport is as tough to play, and at least, at the very least, looks as tough to play as box lacrosse. Because in a lot of sports, there's protection everywhere, but from the bottom of their shorts down, there isn't that much protection for players in lacrosse.
No, you got your shoes, and that's about it.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it makes it, you know, the physical aspect, I think, is enhanced by the bare legs. Does that sound stupid? I'm actually being serious. I know it sounds crazy, but.
Well, when you look at field lacrosse and you look at box lacrosse and they are wearing the shorts, it is possible. I mean, there's more of you that's exposed. You know what I mean? Like
yep.
With hockey, the cup, the pants, the socks and the skates and everything like that. But with box and field, it's your cup and your shoes and away you go.
Right. So I guess, you know, this is our third show, by the way, and I'd like to remind people of that. And it is, of course, January 15th, 2014. And for those of you that follow the program very closely, no, January 8th, 2013 wasn't last week's show. I did that check thing everybody does when they, you know, in the old days we used to fill out checks. It would take about four or five checks before I got 14. But anyway. So just so we understand that the last show was not in 2013. It was in 2014 last week. So now we do have, you know, an interesting situation developing in the NLL. And so let's talk about some of them. First of all, if we can start with some of the news going around. We all know that if you go to NLL.com, you can check out the same information we're going to share with you now, and some that we have as insiders or people who follow a lot closer. The information can come out from the website, so we can discuss that as well. And also, you know, we have the advantage of being able to share our opinions. So, I want to remind people that when you go to NLL.com, you can go to the schedule and scores, and beside the scores, this is the part that might be a little tough. If you don't want to know the score, somehow you got to not look, and then hit the link beside the score where you can watch your team's game, you know, on demand. Thanks to YouTube and the National Lacrosse League's willingness to post the games. So if in your area you can't watch games of your team, or if in your area that isn't the area of your team, you can still watch the games. First of all, do either of you have an opinion on the availability of games so freely on the Internet? And I'll start with you, Aaron, this time.
Well, I think it's a great thing that the games are as widely available as they are. The unfortunate thing about that is it all depends on the quality of your Internet hookup. If you've got the high speed and you've got the download capacity for it, then, yeah, it's great. You can watch whenever you want. The one issue that I have, it's a minor issue, really, is it's the scoreboard feed from every game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, while in and of itself isn't all that terrible, it's not the same number of angles that you're going to be getting from a TSN feed or, you know, any one of the other networks that the games are actually broadcast on. So,
but if you're a fan of the National Lacrosse League and you don't realize that you have the availability to watch the game, I think that's the primary point, and you know, the point what that needs to be reminded for folks. Also, those that don't get a chance to go to the games, or as we try to do here on this program, is help to educate people as much as they can be educated from unintelligent people such as myself. But there is a term, you know, from the mouths of babes. So I'm in there somewhere between intelligent and mouths of babes. So you know, we'll try to help you to be enjoy the game even more. We're here to enhance the game. So you can watch the games, yes, on the internet, and yes, they may not be HD plus quality, but I'll tell you something about the game. You know, a lot of the activity, I've watched the games on, you know, that you download, and thank goodness for lacrosse having the item that everyone wants is a rubber ball, fair sized. So even some of the lesser quality that you might run into, it's not too hard to follow the play. And in some cases, it doesn't matter how the quality of television is, you're not going to follow the ball, because sometimes that thing's screaming across, from right to left to right or up and down. And that may or may not be an issue. So you can watch the games. Now, this week, we'll talk a little bit about what's gone on this week. Now, I've got, first of all, the Mammoth signed former MVP, Iannucci.
Iannucci.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about this guy. And, Aaron, you want to go first this time?
Yeah, definitely. Nathan's been around for a while. Give me just a second here, because I know I don't have his stats on the tip of my tongue. I just want to give me a second here to just grab them.
Okay, then why don't you do that? And while you do that, you can do the statistical stuff. Do you feel comfortable, Gary, talking about this guy as far as what you think of him as a player?
His best years were a couple of years ago in Philadelphia, and he's kind of petered off since with injuries and things like that. So we're kind of hoping that this is a little bit of a rebirth for him. And it looks like it's going to be a good place to step in, because they didn't have the greatest weeks, and it looks like they could use a little bit of a push. So there will be plenty of opportunity for him to get back into the swing of things.
His last really good season was actually 2008, where he had 100 points. He had 71 goals and 29 assists. That was also the year, unfortunately, he was one and done in the playoffs that year. But that was also his only All-Star year. I mean, he's a good player. You know, he's a West Coast player, so people out there will be familiar with him.
Yeah, and his first game will be in Langley against Vancouver. And, I agree. The thing about players like him, they have experience, and that experience, you know, the Mammoth need with an important player for them, Steven Govett, that went down. So, you know, they've got a hole to fill. And this is, you know, for a player that has had better statistics in the past and has had maybe a few years that aren't as good as maybe his better years, they are going for a reach. But at the end of the day, you know, the guy has a lot of talent. So the Mammoth, it's an intelligent move on my part, I believe, they've got to make sure that, you know, they're off to a pretty good start this year. And sometimes these kind of moves have to be made or your team slides. And it gives the team an impression that the team management cares to keep the team, you know, in a positive direction. So it's an important move in that sense. Even if it doesn't get any goals, I think it helps in the dressing room, it helps with the coach selling the team on we want to win. And you know, we've all seen guys... organizations that say they want to win and don't do things that really, you know, give the impression. You might, you know, talk is cheap, as they say. And I think it's a good move, you know, for the team.
I think another part of it is also that he doesn't have to be the top banana there. There's not a whole lot of pressure. He can step in as a third or fourth shooter and kind of work his way back in. Whereas in some other situations, he might have to come in as a top gun. And after the seasons he's had and the injuries and things like that, it may not be the best situation for him to step into, so he can ease himself in.
The fact that he's got Delgarno, Westervelt, and Grant in front of him, you know, does take a lot of pressure off him. that can help you get right back into the swing of it. I mean, Adam Jones has been tearing it up for them too, so that's an additional load off of Iannucci.
So
yeah, very important.
He can ease himself in very, very, very easily there. I think it's a really good situation for him.
Now, one of the things, we'll move on to the next item that the National Lacrosse League does, and they have their fan photo winners. I love this. I love this, where fans get to take pictures. And, you know, there's a lot going on, and this is one way to counteract the downside of not showing broadcast games, because you don't get as many, because of the internet feeds, you don't get as many shots of the fans, you know, the kissing and, you know, the kiss cam and all that kind of stuff, right? Even though there are sometimes it's on. It depends which team is handling the broadcast. This is kind of interesting. I don't think there's a group of fans that has as many young fans as lacrosse. Why do you think that is, guys?
It's affordable. It's affordable to bring the family out to the games. Even, you know, you're talking about top tickets being maybe $50. You can get deals for $15. That's just here. In some of these smaller venues, I know Rochester, it's just probably half the cost it is here, plus they have deals. Philadelphia as well. It's an inexpensive thing. So it's easy to bring the whole family out and have everybody interested in the game and a family outing, nonetheless.
Aaron?
That's the thing. They've always tried to market, even though it's a hard-hitting game, even though, you know, it can get violent at times, they have pushed it as really a family-oriented sport, and that's the atmosphere in the arenas too. You know, I mean, you go to a hockey game, a Leaf game, or an AHL game, well, not necessarily the AHL, but the NHL for sure, feels a lot more corporate and business-oriented. There's not as many young fans in the stands. Whereas with the National Lacrosse League and the AHL, you get a lot of younger fans in the stands because, like you mentioned, Gary, it's affordable. It's the best bang for your entertainment dollar. And that, I think, is the one strength that they really need to capitalize on. I mean, they've done a good job of it so far, and I love seeing the Rib Cage Brigade in the stands, but, you know, they can always do more.
Okay, that's fair enough. At the end of the day, it's a fun experience. And the times that I've gone to the game, there's always a high level of energy, and the kids love the thing. And there's another one that one of our listeners keeps calling me, and he keeps saying, Frank, you got to get the owner's kid from the Toronto Rock on. Well, we'll keep trying, folks. You know, he's a lot of fun. He's very young, but his enthusiasm, you know, is infectious. And that's what sport's all about. You know, sometimes I think we get too caught up in the business of sport and we forget what sport's all about. And what it is for entertainment and for an opportunity for, you know, people to go together to a game, cheer for their team, and enjoy the experience. And it is a great experience at lacrosse games. And the intensity of the game itself and the excitement of the game, the fast-paced nature of it, the fact that, as Bruce Barker told us in our first week, our first show, is that it's probably the only sport where music plays through during the game, which adds to the excitement, don't you think, guys?
Most definitely. It's a good way to keep the crowd pumped up. I do have one minor beef with that, though, and that's if fans want to get involved and start cheering, it's a little hard to be heard over the music at times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's a trade-off. You know, I mean, you either have the music going all the time or you have, you know, fans cheering all the time, and the fan cheering isn't necessarily going to happen every single second of every single game. So you have
that's the importance of guys like Bruce Barker, you know, where they get to get a sense, and that's what Bruce's job is up in the, you know, as the game announcer, the live game announcer. It's his job to ensure that, and the guys like him, to ensure that they have a sense of when the fans want to cheer, either step back or lead in the charge, if you will.
So most definitely. I mean, he looks for opportunities too. When I'm sitting up there in the booth, he'll call down to the game director and suggest different cheers and, you know, when to do it and what music cues he could want. So it's actually a pretty immersive and pretty neat experience.
All right. Now, I'm going to mention a name that, well, it's it's a name that's well known in lacrosse, Brian Shanahan. And Brian is entrusted with the power rankings, which basically is a review in the week, and they list the teams, top teams in order of which teams are most powerful, if you will, that week, and which are on a winning trend or a positive trend more than any other. And Brian Shanahan is the brother of the guy in the NHL that played for a few NHL teams, including New Jersey, and now is the top referee, if you will, because anything that happens that goes over the line, like headshots and stuff, he determines whether players get no games off or, and with pay, remember, they get games off with pay, or as much as he's done this year so far, I think 15-game suspension to the Bruins Thornton. So his job is to educate us or give us his insight, and what he's doing is really he's stoking the fire for us to have our conversation, which begins with the fact that two things. For the first time in 9 years, Vancouver had a home box lacrosse game, which they won against the Minnesota Swarm, which is great news to have, Vancouver, the stealth in the National Lacrosse League. And, of course, the Buffalo Bandits, they swept the Toronto Rock and the Philadelphia Wings over the past weekend. Which,
and if you take a look at the power rankings, you'll see it reflects that because they jumped up the most in the league. They jumped up six spots.
Absolutely. And the defending champs, Rochester, are still number one. They beat the Philadelphia Wings, who lost twice this weekend, once to them and once to Buffalo. So far, last week we discussed, gentlemen, that we all felt that Rochester's the team to beat. By virtue of being the champions, that usually is the case. That's not a surprise that you would have them be that. But they really have maintained, the throne and have done a good job of it so far, but going 2-0 so far. So that's the way champs should come into the season, and they're doing well. Now, Aaron, I'm going to jump all over you now.
Okay.
Number three. And why are they number three? Where's number two?
Number two is Edmonton.
Edmonton had a huge, huge game.
I called that one Colorado, didn't I?
Incredible.
Yeah, that was, to put it politely, that was a butt-kicking.
There you go.
Yeah, I think they were down 3-0 before the anthems were over.
Yeah, pretty much.
So Edmonton's 2-0 as well.
Okay. Yeah. That 70-6 was just awesome. It was one of those results that you didn't expect, but at the same time, we're really happy to see.
Yes.
One of those games, I think this is one of the few games where they've had two players that have scored 5 goals. That would have been Mark Matthews and Zach Greer for the Edmonton Rush. I was actually hoping for a sock trick. Now, for those that don't know, a sock trick is 6 goals or 2 hat tricks. The announcers were even positing it that if it might be possible for 2 players to have a sock trick in the same game. Aaron Bold played absolutely lights out in goal for them. The funny thing is, though, they lost 62% of the faceoffs. They actually managed to lose 67% of the faceoffs. That was Snyder on the Colorado Mammoth. We talked about him and Jeff Snyder last week.
Aaron, let's get into the specifics of the games later. For now, just for the sake of discussion, we won't worry too much about the exact specifics of the game. We'll get into the scores and the standings. We get into all the games. For now, just from the perspective of the rankings, right now we've got Rochester first. It's pretty easy because early in the season by going and saying, Rochester's 2-0, Edmonton's 2-0, so 1-2, that works. Buffalo Bandits are third, they're 2-1. The Rock are 1-1. Vancouver's 1-1. Calgary's 1-1. The Wings are 1-2, and I'm doing this in order. So pretty much, it's easy for to not question the rankings, but specifically, one has to be the 1-1 Toronto Rock. They're ranked fourth. Do you think maybe having lost one game, played only two, are there any concerns with the Rock and where they stand, league wide?
Well, personally, I wasn't very happy with the second half that they put out. I thought they were asleep through most of it. That becomes a problem when they get a lead and take the foot off the gas. I thought they let Buffalo into this game, and then Buffalo took it and ran with it.
Gary, I got
to
dispute
with you on that. I find
that
to be a bit of a problem.
I got to dispute with you on that, Gary. It's John here. And you know what? You know why the Rock lost? It's because Aaron did it to them. He said, it's going to be a long season for the Bandit, quote unquote. Remember that, Aaron?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. You see how
I
that
still
bites
think
you
it is
going
to be a long season for the Bandits. They happen to have one good weekend, but
how you boys doing? How you boys doing? How you boys doing? How you doing?
Okay, John.
I'm enjoying the lacrosse talk tonight.
It's true. Aaron did suggest that Buffalo might have a long season, but you know it is only, you know, three games into the season, so we'll see, Aaron. But Aaron, it's true, and that's an important point. What made Buffalo look so much better this week that didn't last week? Like, for me, I thought Buffalo had a lot more holes than, you know, sweeping Philadelphia that isn't a real horrible team, and the Toronto Rock that's supposed to be a good team. Like, what did they do differently this past weekend?
Cosmo was lights out. Cosmo was just a rock back there. He faced, 60 shots?
62, yep.
Yeah, and he was just lights out. You know.
Also, the Bandits didn't take dumb penalties.
Yeah, we went over that quite a bit last week, didn't we?
Right.
Yeah, we did. Oh, you know what
number,
else? Number three
on the list, yeah.
Guys, the Bandits get pumped up when they play Toronto, okay? It's one of those rivalry things that they're trying to create. And I have a feeling that the Bandit players get a little bit more jacked up when they're in Buffalo because they want to play for their fans a little bit stronger. And they played pretty good when they're here in Toronto, too, because they have a small following that follows them up here. You guys would know better than I would, but I hear them in the stands once in a while, right? So I think it's just because they were just a little bit more pumped. I still think the Rock are a better team, no doubt. But you can see, I think it was the passion that came in at the end that played the defense for the Bandits that game. It was a good game. I mean, I love the Rock, and I want the Rock to win, but never go bad-mouthing the other team before the game.
So the penalties, not taking the penalties, Aaron.
Yeah.
Right? The goaltending was outstanding, right, Gary? Anything else?
Yeah,
I
thought that, like I say, Cosmo was lights out. I thought Nick Rose looked great for 40-45 minutes. He had a few lapses near the end there, but I thought our whole defense went kind of to sleep for the last little bit.
All right, and then as we go down, we have the Vancouver Stealth, Calgary Roughnecks. Both are 1-1, and I want you to know, folks, the first thing I can mention to you fans is that we have set up a relationship, gratefully, and I will say gratefully, with the Calgary Roughnecks. We should be able to get some players, and we'll be working with them and seeing who they make available to us to talk to, and it'll be a lot of fun. And we're working on the rest of the teams. For those of you that are following us, please be patient with us. Aaron is working really hard, as I am, in trying to set up relationships, brand new relationships, with people who don't know us from Adam. And it's difficult when you have a property like the National Lacrosse League. You don't want to give open season to yourself unless you vet the people that you're bringing in. So we respect that and understand that, but what I can tell you is this will become a program where people from across the country who are fans of different teams, and actually across North America, will get a chance to call and take part. We've done it before in the CFL, and we'll do it now with the NLL. So Shanahan, you know, basically, I guess, guys, looking at these standings, he pretty much went with their records. Now, that may be a coincidence at this point, but right now the Mammoth look like them and the Swarm look like they're having a tough start to the season. I think the Mammoth are a lot better than their, you know, their win total shows, 1-3. What do you guys think?
Oh, most definitely. There's so much talent on that team. It's just getting it all together, and I think in the next few weeks you're going to see that they're going to start rising.
Okay. And the Minnesota Swarm, you pretty much say the same thing. That's the team that we witnessed at the ACC, the victory that they had in the first round against the Toronto Rock, surprising them on a Sunday afternoon. Boy, were they surprised. Are the Swarm a better team than their 0-2 record indicates?
Most definitely they are. As far as I'm concerned, they are a very, very good team. The problem that they have is they just had a bit of a bad start.
Yeah, they seem to have some trouble scoring right now, but that's going to work itself out. They've got a ton of talent.
All right, so to remind people, the Eastern Division has the Buffalo Bandits, Minnesota Swarm, Philadelphia Wings, Rochester Nighthawks, and the Toronto Rock. The West has the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, and the Vancouver Stealth. So we've talked a little bit about the teams, and we can go to this, be more specific now in each game, because there were some interesting, you know, to say the least. The Roughnecks, you know, are a team that I think we're going to have fun talking to, and the reason being, it is an interesting situation with the Roughnecks. The Roughnecks are associated with the Calgary Flames and the Calgary Hitmen, which are the junior team in Calgary. This is quite a, you know, this is an interesting team and organization. Do you see this kind of patronage from hockey and junior hockey association with lacrosse? I mean, there are two great Canadian games. One was at one time the solitary national pastime, national sport, and now shares this, you know, is the summer versus the winter, which is hockey. Do you see more of this going on, guys? Because even in Colorado, this takes place because the Colorado Mammoth are associated with the Colorado Avalanche. Will we see more teams like this? Teams like
it happens in Buffalo also because the Sabres and the Bandits are affiliated with one another.
Okay, so so far the Rock doesn't have a direct affiliation with any organization or the Maple Leafs or blah 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 and all that kind of stuff. Do you see something like that in the future?
In all honesty, I hope not.
Okay.
I don't see it happening either.
No, go ahead, Gary.
I got to disagree with both of you guys. I kind of think the MLSC is looking at taking over the whole sports scene in Toronto. They're going to do it with the Argos. They've already done it with the other sports teams. I mean, they already have the Rock renting, you know what I mean, in the facility. And it's just because of the honorable owner that the Rock have that it's maintained as a private ownership. I think... In reality, guys, we all know that the advertising dollar would be bigger with MLSC. The exposure would be bigger. Maybe not much bigger, but because, you know, they're getting their fair exposure as it is, but I think it just would be a notch up. Just like we always talk about what would happen with the CFL, Toronto Argonauts being bought, they would get the bonus of having the MLSC marketing and so forth. It would work the same way for the Rock. You guys know the days of Maple Leaf Gardens when they first came and sellouts and all that stuff. I'm still disappointed that it filtered out that way. But I think at the time, you know, I recall that because it was at Maple Leaf Gardens and more or less the Leafs in a way were supporting them because they were allowing them to be a tenant there, it got a little bit more exposure. I kind of learned about the Rock because of the fact that the Leafs were exposing them because they were playing in the same arena. You know, right now, we're not getting that exposure. We just know that they play at Air Canada Arena. I wish, in a way, that, you know, the owner is great, and just like Braley is great for the Argos, but their dollars can only go so far. And, you know, I'm just going to put it in a nutshell. They are going to eventually take over the Rock, and I think it might be beneficial for them if they do.
I just hope they don't get lost in the shuffle between all the other messes they have there. So.
Well, guys, you know,
they haven't been able to run one sports team correctly.
Hey, one more
yet,
thing.
So.
I could see, and if you guys can understand from a business point of view, why they would be attracted to the Rock or the Argos, because we've, you know, privately said this to each other, it's the only championship representing the city. Is coming from
the Argos have done well on their own, and I agree with the point that, you know, if you're an Argo fan, you know, you're an Argo fan. If you're a Rock fan, you're a Rock fan. But I think the Rock fans, at least from their experience, and I get what Gary's saying, is that there's not a long history of winning with MLSC. In fact, there's zero winning with MLSC. So, you know, I get what you guys are saying, and I'm inclined to agree with you that it's kind of scary. But then again, there's a new regime in MLSE, guys. You know, there's a new guy in town. And so far, if you give them a blank page, the Leafs aren't any better than they were last year before the new guy took over. The Raptors, in fact, are. They're a much better organization today than they were a year ago before, and I think John will refer to the guy as Mr. Lewicki, before he came in. The soccer team, the Toronto FC, they just spent over $100 million on four players. And you know, they're going nuts with at least bringing in talent. Whether, you know, we've seen lots of teams that bring in talent and don't go anywhere. And so I guess, you know, the Marlies had success last year. Of all the teams that MLSE owns, they have come the closest. They made it to the championship 2 years ago and came up empty. But then again, you know, they get a blank page because they have a new leader. They seem to be going in the right direction with a couple of organizations. They seem to be willing to spend money. And, you know, that's something that the reason I raised that issue is because the Rock's going to have to keep up, you know, along with the relationship with a big company or a big organization, that especially one that specializes in sport. John will tell you, training facilities and such, you get to share that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of things, medical staff. There's all kinds of things that may not rise to the front for us, you know, as fans. But for the organization, it will be a plus. But again, hesitant because not sure that the owner that the Rock have right now wants to, you know, to sell the team, because I happen to think John used the word honorable with their owner. I would say not just honorable. I would say a guy who has you know, he's been basically running a team uphill, and not because the league is the problem, but because, you know, in this city there's so much competition.
Well,
that's
sure.
Right.
I would use the word outstanding, and don't forget he also built a training facility out in Oakville.
There you go.
The athletic facility out there, which is state of the art. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, you should. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal facility.
So it may or may not be necessary to have, you know, input from professional hockey teams, the NHL teams, their kind of money, or junior or whatever. That may not be that important. So let's go now to the game guy game. Synopsis, if you are synopsi, if that's what, you know, more than one synopsis is. So we know that the Rock lost to the Buffalo Bandits, and they lost 12-10. So the score is an indication that it was close. Was it close, guys? Maren, you first. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, the game was relatively close, but it's the fact that the Rock didn't score a goal in the third quarter that I think is most telling. The Bandits did all of their scoring in about 3 minutes in the third quarter, from about the 11-minute mark to the 14-minute mark. Just they kept popping goals. It's like the entire defensive core just left.
Fell asleep. It just was completely asleep.
That's pretty much all that. I mean, that's the difference in the game right there, is the fact that it was tied by the end of the third quarter. It didn't help that the Rock surrendered 2 goals in a minute and 20 to start the fourth either. And this is a trend that seems to have continued from previous years. The Rock always seem to have a bit of difficulty coming out of the gate hot in the third quarter. If you look at the way that the scoring is distributed, the Rock have actually only scored in the 2 games they've played so far this season 3 goals. In the third quarter. They've scored 11 goals in the first, 4 in the second, 8 in the third, but only 3 in the third quarter. The only team that's done worse in that regard is the Rochester Nighthawks. But the Rochester Nighthawks have won both of their games.
There you go.
So
timely scoring counts as much as how much you score. You need timely goals to, you know, it's like they say, you know, there's certain players that score when it really matters. So right now, the Toronto Rock not playing as well, don't look like they're playing as well. Buffalo's playing, at least if we can consider ourselves experts, they're playing over their head right now. But they may prove to be the real deal. But then again,
Can I say something, Frank? Regarding the Rock, right? I mean, regarding their goals in a third, this is just a sign of a blue-collar team that works during the week, goes on a road game that's on a bus trip, is a little bit wary on the feet, and, you know, is kind of flat coming in the third. At the beginning of the season, you get this tendency to see this early. I think probably the fourth, fifth game, I don't think they're going to be as weak in the third quarter. I think they're, you know, it takes a little bit more effort to get into game shape, as you guys can see these guys progress better than I do. You guys are at the games. But I just thought that they just came out flat. They came out flat. Buffalo being at home, home cooking, they didn't have to travel. They came from their 9-to-5 job and went straight to the arena. Pardon the pun. It didn't happen that way. But you get what I'm trying to say, right? So I just think it was just because it's early in the season. I think once they get themselves into game shape and more home games rather than the kind of these bus trip games, it wears them out. I think what it came down to is the wear out. I still think Rock is the better talented team. It's obvious. It was what, one goal difference? You know, I'm not gonna call it the season, and I'm not gonna say Bandits are really that
well,
good either.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll leave what happened at First Niagara Center there. And we'll move on to Scotiabank Saddledome, which is also the home of the Calgary Flames. And the Calgary Roughnecks, they played the Colorado Mammoth. And one of the reasons why the Mammoth, their power ranking is a little bit low is because they lost against the Calgary Roughnecks. Tell us a little bit about that game, guys, starting with you, Gary.
That was a barn burner of a game. It was an absolutely phenomenal game to watch. The second quarter was where most of the scoring was in that game. If I remember right, Calgary got 7 goals. And that basically set the tone. But again, Colorado came out flat in the third, and they didn't score at all in the third, and that pretty much shut them down. But I thought this was a much better game from Calgary than the game before they played against Toronto.
Yeah, and the game they played against Toronto, they were totally different in this game. This game, they were consistent. They looked like they had a plan, and they were executing the plan. And Colorado really just got run over by Calgary, it appeared, for the most part, when it mattered.
Yes, for sure.
Aaron?
Well, the fact that Jeff Snyder came through on the faceoff for them again really did help. Jeff Shatler had another big game. Dane Dalby had a big game. We get guys that Shatler scored 4 goals, 1 assist. Dalby had 4 and 2. I mean, Adam Jones didn't play badly on the opposite side of the ball either. He had 2 goals and 1 assist to keep his lead in the scoring race. Westervelt and Grant both chimed in, 2 and 4 and 2 and 3. The scoring is there. The teams were really, really evenly matched, so there's only a difference of 9 shots between the two teams, and that's I think, what made the difference. And specifically, those 2 goals that Calgary got in the third quarter that Colorado didn't.
Exactly.
And again, it gets back to the whole home cooking thing again, I guess, eh?
Well, you know, I mean, guys, I mean, this is the same thing that, you know, when we do our CFL stuff, is these players are lovers of the game. They just, you know, when you watch the games, there's not the kind of whining that you see in other sports. These guys could be staying home and resting and continuing their or you know, leaving their lacrosse lives behind, but these guys can't. It's they're just nuts about the game and it shows on, you know, on the floor. So, you know, we get that and it's great that it's like that. So those were the 2 Friday games, and then of course Saturday comes along and there's 3 games. The first was at Blue Cross Arena in Rochester, New York, which saw the Nighthawks win 13-9 over the Philadelphia Wings. Now, Rochester's expected to win. The Philadelphia Wings they're one of those teams that could go either way. What did you guys think of the game, Aaron, starting with you?
Well, it was a well-played game. I think it's closer than the score indicates. The fact that they were tied at the end of the first 3-all, Rochester just kind of walked away with it in the second quarter. You know, I mean, whenever you go on a 6-0 run for a quarter, that's pretty much the game. You know, pretty good goals by Jameson and by Point. you know, these things happen, though. You're going to get runs on you. The question is, how well do you recover? How hard do you come back?
Mm-hmm.
And they made a go of it. They got 4 goals to Rochester's 1 in the third quarter, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, Rochester
and, you know,
woke up again in the fourth with another 3.
Yeah.
And I kind of sailed it away. But it was a heart-inspired comeback in the third by Philadelphia when you really didn't think that they were going to do too much after the second quarter. But whatever was said in the room, they came out flying and had a really good quarter.
Yeah, and this was a confidence building for Philadelphia because nobody really knows what this team's going to do. It's kind of on the cusp of being good or it could slip. And I think this was a great confidence builder, and I think because Rochester's they're well coached, they got great players, and they just won a championship. So confidence isn't a problem for them. Philadelphia, I think I agree with you guys and Gary, especially you, that they came on at the end there and turned it into a much tighter game than it could have been, which speaks well about the team. And it helps their fans to know that even though they might question, viability of their team having a big year, if they work hard and try hard, the fans love that. And that's something, as a fan myself, I appreciate from teams.
And that really was the sign of Philadelphia's weekend, because when we get to Buffalo's game there, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Down early and then made a heart-inspired comeback and almost pulled it off.
The next game on January 11th is... Go ahead. Well,
hey, fellas, can I ask you a question? We're 45 minutes into the show. How do I get tickets, and when's the next game?
Well, the next Toronto Rock home game is going to be January 31st. They're going to be facing off against the Vancouver Stealth. Now, tickets are still available through Ticketmaster, through torontorock.com. You can go down to the Air Canada Centre box office. Additionally, if you're looking for season tickets, the Toronto Rock are currently selling prorated season tickets. For the remainder of the season, they'll be on sale all the way up until game time on the 31st.
And what's prorated mean? Like a group discount or like a bundle or something?
Well, they'll discount it slightly based on the fact that there's already been one game played. You'll get the remaining 8 games in a playoff game.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate
that. No problems, John.
Okay. Now, just keep in mind, guys, at the end of this section, we'll read you again that the NLL has a website, and to purchase tickets, you get on that website, you'll be able to find contact information for all the teams and how you can get tickets for all the teams. So that's something to keep in mind. Game 2 was at Rexall Place. It had the Colorado Mammoth against the Edmonton Rush, and you guys mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the power rankings, and Edmonton really crushed Colorado 17-6.
It was a shellacking. It never was close. And Edmonton showed that they have as much defense as they do offense.
What?
They're going to be a force.
What can we take from this game other than the fact that Colorado wants to play real soon?
I would be very worried playing Edmonton
after this game.
For other teams in the league.
So you figure it was a function of Edmonton's fine play as opposed to Colorado's not looking so effective?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And Edmonton's shown this over the last couple of years in not as a consistent thing, but if they can actually get it together on a consistent basis, they're going to be a really, really scary team.
The third game on January 11th, Saturday, this past Saturday, was at the Langley Event Center. The Vancouver Stealth beat the Minnesota Swarm 8-5. You'd almost think it was the Vancouver Canucks against the Minnesota Wild with that score. Very low scoring, not very often, guys.
No, this is true. Both goalies appeared to be really on top of their games. It was actually something I was very glad to see. Tyler Richards played absolutely lights out. I mean, he faced 50 shots, and Minnesota only scored 5 goals. That's lights out goaltending right there. The other thing that I was happy to see was the Vancouver Stealth spread around scoring. There were 7 different goal scorers for them. The only person that actually had more than one goal was Reese Dutch. He got 2 goals and 1 assist. Now, just like other teams, they didn't actually win all of the faceoffs. I'm not 100% sure how that worked out for them, but they only actually won 35% of the faceoffs. And when you're facing that much of a tactical disadvantage, it says something about your defense if you do manage to outscore the opposing team. Minnesota, a bit of a shocker, to be perfectly honest with you. I was expecting a little bit more out of them. There wasn't a time when they fell asleep, which was a good thing. When you look at the scoring, it was pretty evenly distributed. But this second loss is what dropped them to near the bottom of the standings, only in front of the Mammoth. So the good thing is the attendance there was 5,031. Max capacity for the Langley Event Center is, I believe, 5,275. So that means they sold out every single seat, but not the boxes.
Well, there you go.
So
now we've got one last game that took place, and it took place on Sunday, the 12th, and it was at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and it had Buffalo visiting Philadelphia and going away with a 12-11 overtime victory. Philadelphia came up short. Buffalo ended up winning. I think what we've seen with these two teams are a great indication of two of the teams that will be in the hunt in the playoffs for the championship. They will probably be, if things continue to look the way they do, will be dark horses. And they played like it in this game. It was a coin flip.
I think it was a tale of two halves. It was two different games because Buffalo was out 9-4 at one stage, and then it was all Philadelphia after that. And it did. It came down to the overtime for the winning goal.
It's that ageless wonder, John Tavares, at it again.
Yeah, ageless wonder. Didn't he retire?
This is absolutely unbelievable. He's mid-40s, and he's still putting
up... And he gets the overtime goal, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, he's hanging around because he wants to show his nephew how long he can last. He's really creating a challenge for his nephew, John Tavares, who plays for the Islanders.
Well, it's definitely a sign to – it's definitely a testament to John Tavares' ruggedness. I mean, he doesn't have the foot
Absolutely.
Speed he used to have. I think you can nail time him with a calendar, but he's still got the smarts. He's still got the hands.
Five goals in the game, so he's still got the touch for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We've almost come a full circle, guys. When you think about it, we started with Iannucci signing with Colorado. You know, this is the same story, except that, you know, Tavares has maintained a constant, you know, star quality that a lot of players in any sport can't keep, you know, keep that pace. And he has. He has been one of the outstanding players, you know, in box lacrosse. And I say box lacrosse because he goes back beyond even the National Lacrosse League.
No, he does. He goes way back.
Yeah, he was a staple with the Mill League as well.
Yeah.
Okay, as I promised, we'll remind you again, folks, that if we just talked about some games and the results, we'll continue in our weekly parade of information. And at this point, we'll remind you that NLL.com allows you access to all the teams in the National Lacrosse League. And at that place you can purchase tickets or get information on where to buy tickets and also buy gear and all kinds of stuff that belong to the National Lacrosse League. And at this point, I guess I got to give a shout out to Jarrett Harris, whom I haven't heard from yet, and he said he wanted to be on tonight. Do you think he's having a nap?
It's entirely possible.
Okay.
Frank, well, I'm just hoping he's going to have to take my place because as I'd mentioned to you earlier, Frank, I have a very early morning.
Good
and
for you.
At this point, I'm going to have to say my adieus for this week.
All right. Have a great night. And where are you singing the national anthem next?
Just a regular deal tomorrow.
Just a regular deal tomorrow? No,
just a regular deal tomorrow.
Have you guys got any national anthem
Nothing
date?
Lined up, no.
Not yet?
Nothing lined up.
Nothing you want to tell us about, you want to share with everyone?
There's nothing lined up yet.
Okay. So we'll see you at Costco tomorrow.
You bet. I'll be there at 3:30.
Talk to you then.
Take it easy, Gary.
That's Gary Grube. Gary Grube, big fan of the Toronto Rock, and if you look behind the Rock chairs where they sit, geez,
bench.
Struggling. Yeah, thanks.
Bench.
The bench. Yeah, thanks a lot. Anyway, that's where Gary is. Gary's right behind the bench, and he'll be the guy screaming and yelling his nose
up.
Against the glass.
Three rows
yeah.
up. Three rows
he'll be,
up.
He'll
behind
be the one
the bench on the aisle.
There you go. Because John sat on his lap 1 week. All right, let's move over, Aaron, to let's move over to the games that are coming up. And again, we'll remind everybody, NLL.com, where you can get in contact with your team, purchase whatever it is that you like, whether it be tickets or you know, paraphernalia. So we got the Swarm in Philadelphia. The Swarm at 0-2, Philadelphia at 1-2. They'll be playing at the Wells Fargo Center. This is going to be an interesting game because Minnesota really needs to get on track. Philadelphia will be motivated at home with a 1-2 record, looking to even things out, Aaron. And how do you see Minnesota winning or Philadelphia winning? What do you see as the key components that will create a win for either team?
Well, I'm looking right now at a desperation on the part of Minnesota. They're 0-2. If they go 0-3, they may pull the trigger on something major, but I think the Rona would rather not do that.
Where's the next home game? Is the next game is on a home, Minnesota?
Minnesota's next game is on the road, actually.
Okay, it's a loss.
Well, it's possible. I don't know, though. I'm at this point, I'm going to bank on Minnesota. Just because Philadelphia
Has...
Well, a betting
man would stay.
Philadelphia has
stay.
Been inconsistent at home, John.
Yeah.
So
I get it.
Great
I get it. But a betting man would say that if a team starts off slow and they're a blue-collar team, well, you know, guys, what I mean by that, and they're on the road on their third straight game, you know, after coming off two first losses, the numbers would say, especially who are they playing against, anybody who's decent, but at this point or so early in the season, I'll take any home team against the road team early in lacrosse. That's what I'm saying. So let's see what happens. But
yep.
I'm going to
yep,
say
we'll
Minnesota loses. I don't even know who they're playing. I don't even know if it's a better team or a worse team. Sorry, I didn't even follow up on that. But I'm just going to say right now.
We're talking about the game between Minnesota and Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo
Center. Okay, Philly fans, Philly atmosphere at home on a Friday night. Am I betting that is right? Friday
Saturday.
Night?
Saturday.
Saturday? Okay, I don't know how big Saturdays are in Philadelphia.
Wait, they're not playing at night. They're playing at noon.
Oh, that's not good. Oh,
yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Now, you did miss the games on the Friday there, January 17th. You've got Calgary.
Yeah,
and
you're right. I did. My bad.
No worries. I was going to say my money's on Edmonton on this one because they're playing at Rexall Place.
Okay.
So
I'll take that, too. I'll take that, too.
Yeah, and then you've got Colorado playing at Vancouver. Colorado's 1-3, Vancouver's 1-1. I'm going to put my money on the Stealth on that one.
Well, I'll tell you right now that Vancouver's got a good team, and they've come into the league with a bang, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, we're joking with the betting aspect of it, but it is kind of too bad that you know, the government lotteries would not pick up on the NLL. Because of the fact that we have Canadian-based teams, you know, just to give it that little bit of exposure for that, you know, different market out there. And you know how guys are and ladies out there who, if there's maybe a couple of dollars on a game, there's a little bit more interest in it. Would you agree? Of course, because
yep, absolutely.
You can see the numbers on TV, right? So
okay.
It's sad. It's sad. Anyway, too bad.
Right.
We joked about the betting
now,
part. But,
I
guys,
guess was
anybody listening
hurry,
out there?
I was in a hurry to get to the Rochester game. I was in a hurry to get to the Rochester game at the Blue Cross Arena, and it's a 7:30 p.m. start, since now we're going to talk about the times. The Toronto Rock are visiting. This, to me, is probably going to be a very interesting game, not because of the Toronto Rock, but because of the way they lost the last game and the fact that the Rochester Nighthawks are 2-0. They're not going to lose that easily at home their first game. Aaron, Rochester's going to be up for this game, and I think the Rock will be motivated. It'll be a great game to watch.
This one is, I think, going to be a bit of a barn burner. The funny thing is, up until The Rock finally won a championship in Rochester 8-6, they'd never won in Rochester. It was pretty much a guaranteed loss every time Toronto walked into the Blue Cross Center. But the past few years, it's gone 50-50. It could really, really go either way. The bus trip that we took down last year, Gary, myself, and a couple other friends, was an awesome game to watch. This one here going to be more of the same. It's going to be an awesome, awesome game to watch. I know I love that word. My money on this one is going to be on Rochester, though, because it is home floor, because they are the champions. It is technically their stomping ground. And The Rock may be gripping the sticks a little bit too tight after losing to Buffalo the way they did last week.
The next game is a 9 p.m. start. These are all Eastern Standard Time times. We'll be in Calgary at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And it'll have Vancouver visiting Calgary. Now, this game will be interesting for a different reason. The first time that these two teams meet, and both being Canadian. I remember the first time Calgary came into Toronto or played Toronto. The interest peaked a little bit because there's that Canadian rivalry, and because most of the players are Canadian, it really does get to be a personal game. And also, these two teams are tied in the standings at 1-1. Aaron, this is good. This has got a chance of being another one of those barn burners you just talked about.
Oh, yeah. No, there was no love lost in past seasons between the Washington Stealth and the Calgary Roughnecks. A lot of the personnel are still in place from Washington now that they're in Vancouver. So this could be a bit of a Donnybrook. But it'll be entertaining, I'll give it that much. on this one here, because they're going to be playing in the Seattle Dome, again, I'm going to go with the home team on this one. So we'll have to see how that one turns out, but I know I'm going to be tuning in. It all depends on how much
of
a Rock game is.
John?
Yeah. No,
I
on that one, nothing. I had something on the Rochester game, but you went to the next game. So I'm good on that one, Aaron. Aaron covered it. Well, Aaron pretty much covered it. I'm good with that.
Okay, so now we've got at the Pepsi Center, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Buffalo Bandits will be in Colorado. I like this game because the intensity is going to be about wanting to keep the momentum going, and that being Buffalo, and the Mammoth wanting to change the momentum. This game is going to be a real, corner turner for both these teams. This game is very important for both teams, obviously for different reasons. You've got Buffalo that's on a good roll, wanting to keep it going, and Colorado, of course, not playing as well as they'd hope, and they don't want to get down in that hole 1-4. So it's going to be an interesting game because I believe this one here, while it might not be a barn burner, it will be a desperately played game.
Well, this one here, the Colorado Mammoth either have the potential to pull themselves even at 3-3 or go to 1-5. Because don't forget, they're playing Vancouver on the Friday.
Yeah.
It's going to be a blowout by Colorado. They're going to blow out the Bandits in this game.
You think the Mammoth are going to blow out the Bandits in Denver?
Yes, totally. If not by what I mean by blowout, in my consideration is at least by 4 goals. Okay.
Okay.
I see the Bandits being overconfident. It's a long road trip. They're feeling good coming off the win against their rival, Colorado, wanting to play good at home. All these teams want to play really good at home. That's where you get the little bit of juice flowing in there. In their veins,
some jam.
Just like Buffalo had. Yeah,
some
jam. So I see a blowout, meaning 4 goals or more. I don't know what you guys consider a blowout in lacrosse, but that's
well,
a pretty good lead.
It's going to be one of those. It's going to be one of those games that I truly believe it's there's going to be a lot of desperation, and I'm even going to predict that there'll be a few more fights than usual than these teams are accustomed to.
When the lead starts to get bigger, I think there'll be probably a little bit more fights going on. Yeah, I think. But I think that's a tendency in every game, right? When they start losing, the best thing to do is start to put the gloves down and get at them, right? It's kind of early in the season. You don't want to bruise the knuckles, right?
Before last week, John, I would have said 2 games in 1 weekend, you're not going to win both. I would have said that before last week. Then Buffalo turned around and won both. Colorado, as Aaron so rightly mentioned, that Colorado will be playing 2 games this weekend themselves. Fortunately, the back half will be at home. So, you know, it's possible. I mean, we've seen it. It's possible Colorado could win both games. And as Aaron said, they could be level at 3-3. Buffalo, on the other hand, it's a long road to Colorado. So, you know, there might be some truth in what John's saying, just simply the traveling that Buffalo is going to have to do, something they're not accustomed to.
Hey, guys, and not to belittle in any way, but we all know the NLL road trips are not red carpeted, okay? So we're not going first class. And it's a blue-collar road trip. So these aren't easy, and these are still, you know, early in the season. They're long road trips. And I just think because of the way they turned out against Toronto, the Bandit, I mean, I think they're going to go in there a little bit. You know, they feel more comfortable than they do desperate. You know, when you come back from a win. And what's their record, Buffalo's record? They got 2 wins, right?
Yeah, Buffalo's currently 2-1.
Okay, well, you see, that's even worse for Buffalo. That's overconfidence right there. And they figure, if we stay tight, you know, after the second period, we'll be happy if they go into the third. But I think, like, we've seen a track record, as I've heard from Aaron and Gary and yourself, Frank, that in the third period, the visiting team seemed to be not getting the goals, right? So I think in this case here, I think Colorado will probably take off in the third if they don't already have a big lead in the third. That's my impression on it anyway.
Well, they're going to have the Hot Tub Girls to back them up, so it should be interesting for them. On January 19th,
Hold on. Express on that, Frank. Hot Tub Girls, what are you talking about?
Aaron, you want to tell them about the Hot Tub Girls?
Tell me about it, Aaron.
Yes, in Colorado, they have a hot tub side of the arena. You can buy tickets for it, and they have they had models and a couple fans in there for the game.
You're kidding?
No.
So let me get this straight. So I can go to the lacrosse game and right beside in the arena, right? In the arena.
It's in the arena.
John, right in the corner of the rink.
Oh, so you
like
can
just
watch
on the other side
the
of the glass.
Tub.
Just on the other side of the glass. Ground level. You're sitting on the floor. You're not sitting on the floor. You're sitting in a hot tub that's sitting on the floor.
I see that.
When I was watching, they had three girls in bikinis, who I will define as pretty. And I didn't know
I'm
that
sure
you could buy tickets to sit in a hot tub with them.
Oh, added
but
bonus, I suppose.
Absolutely.
All right.
I mean,
good to know.
Nothing else,
that's good to know.
The National Lacrosse League does things differently. It sounds like fun, you know. Anyway, so the last game this week is going to be on Sunday, and it'll be in the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, where the Minnesota Swarm will be hosting the Philadelphia Wings. The Swarm at 0-2, and the Philadelphia Wings at 1-2. And this game again, actually, this is identical almost to, you know, even though Philadelphia has a reverse record of Buffalo, 1-2. I think Philadelphia needs, again, to win this game as much as Minnesota does, because quite frankly, at the time in the season, you're really trying to develop your character, and this is going to be one of those character games.
Well, this is also the back half of a home and home.
Yeah, there you go.
So this has the potential to get additionally nasty because it is the back end of it. We could very well be looking at a Donner Party style situation here. It could be rather nasty. It'll be entertaining, I'll give it that much. I'm not going to prognosticate as to how the score is going to be, but it'll be entertaining to say the least. So depending on who comes out on top in the Wells Fargo Center, my money's on Minnesota for that one. I've got Philadelphia coming out on top for this game at the Xcel Energy Center to spoil Minnesota's home opener and drop them to 1-3.
Okay, that wraps up our predictions, our prognostications on the games next week. And
hello.
What? Go ahead.
You know, I'm going to feel like I'm not even in the room here. Did you ask me my opinion on this one? What?
You have an opinion on it?
Oh, okay. No, go move on, Frank. I'll remember this one. Yeah, I got an opinion on this. I'm starting to question your hosting abilities here, buddy. Come on, you got another person in the room, and you don't go, "Hey, You got opinion on this one,
buddy? I didn't even notice you were in the room.
Me,
I didn't even notice.
I know you're trying to ignore me. I know. I listen, Aaron's a star. Aaron's a star. He knows his stuff. Your job is to ask the other guy the other question, and that's me or Gary. Gary's not here. I'm here. You got it? Okay. Well, my opinion on that game, folks, if Frank would
Where's
have asked.
Where's the mic button? Where's the mic button?
It's going to be a snooze. It's going to be a snooze. This one's going to be a boring one. You know,
oh,
Minnesota, Philly.
How did I know I to avoid bringing you into it? What
yeah,
do you mean a
I
snooze?
Know.
And
I...
What makes you think that game's going to be a snooze?
Just because I'm going by the history of Minnesota-Philly games in football and hockey and everything else, they're always defensive. Okay, these two teams, these two cities hate each other. If you're from Minnesota like Manessa is, if you're from Philly, you know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, I think you mean not defensive. I think you mean offensive.
No, I mean defensive. I think it's going to be a snooze.
I'm making a pun, but it didn't land.
Oh, okay. No, Frank. Yeah. A lot of them don't land, buddy. Sorry. They're off the landing strip like by a mile, like that recent WestJet plane. Landed what, in the wrong freaking
city? All right,
city?
This game's going to be defensive. So what, it's going to be another 8-6 score? Is that what you're predicting?
It's going to be low. I don't know if it's going to be 8-6. I think it might go into double digits barely, you know, at the end when they empty the one team's going to have to be taking their goalie out. You might reach 10, but I don't know. I just think this one's going to be a tight game, and this is the one I expect fights in. Because if you don't have fights in a mini Philly game, then it's not a game.
Okay, I gotcha.
All right.
Thanks, we'll move on now. We'll move on to the standings now. And so far things are basically with Rochester, you know, in first, 2-0, not a surprise. One would think, though, the Buffalo Bandits, when the season started, would not be ahead of the Toronto Rock. And they have to be congratulated on the way they've come out of the gate because Buffalo, Aaron, historically doesn't come out of the gate that quick during the season.
No, this is true. Sometimes they're slow off the line.
What do you think the difference for them is this year? What is the difference for them?
They took advantage of their opportunity against Toronto to get themselves that second win.
And that's the old part
through for them against Philly.
There you go. And then, of course, bringing up the rear of Philadelphia Wings and Minnesota Swarm, Philadelphia 1-2 and the Minnesota Swarm at 0-2. Now, we expect more of Minnesota. I don't know, that last year, at least in that playoff game, it looked like they were secure in goaltending, but they still haven't settled in on a goaltender this year so far, have they?
No, it doesn't appear so. They seem to be going back and forth with their goalies. Hopefully the next couple of weeks will solidify something for them. But as it currently stands, I've got a bit of a plugged nose here, so every once in a while things come out garbled.
Well, we can always go to John if you're having a problem and ask him if he sees any surprises in the standings so far in the East.
Is this Groundhog Day? Are we talking about mini Philly again?
No, we're not talking about mini Philly. We're talking about the East Division.
You were talking about mini goaltending. What are you talking about,
yes,
Frank?
Yes. We're talking about the standings in the Eastern Division. Rochester won the championship last year. We see a little bit of a change because Buff came out really quick. Toronto, I think it's fair to say, with the kind of season they were hoping to have, they're off to, it's hard to say 1-1 is a slow start. But Aaron, would it be a fair statement?
I think so. I think it's fair to say that is a slow start.
So do you see things shaking out the way, are they shaking out the way they should, John? Or how do you see changes coming in the Eastern Division? What to look forward to from some of these teams to see, you know, to give us an idea of where you think the teams are headed. Is this basically the way they're going?
I'm mostly just worried about my team and my player. And I'm a guy who likes to cheer for the defense more. I think that's probably the most important part of any team. Chapman is my man, and I think Sandy, I'm looking forward to a good year from him. I think the Rock are doing – I think it's kind of lopsided to me. I thought they were going to lose their home opener and win the Buffalo game, okay? And it just kind of went the opposite way around. You know, guys, they have a good coaching staff. I think the manager and the management there put a good team together this year. It's just a matter of getting the chemistry together. It's always early, you know, when these teams don't have that preseason warm-up, you know, that gelling part of it, that you know. And I think these couple of these road trips are going to be useful for them when it comes to that. I think it's going to be handy to get these guys together, bond them a little bit together, have that morning practice or afternoon practices and dinners together, and I think they're going to pick it up a little bit. I'm looking forward to, and here's a prediction coming out, three-game win streak coming up for The Rock.
Okay, and that'll be starting this weekend.
Starting this weekend, that's right.
There you go.
Because
okay,
of the Buffalo
so,
game, the Buffalo
so now
game
that,
being
that,
such
that,
a...
So you see, I asked the question. I didn't hear the answer. So is this what the standings are going to look like at the end of the year, or do you see anybody making a move? Is Toronto's the only team you'll be making a move, you know, basically? The rest of the,
well,
like Minnesota's going to find, well, we can talk about this as well. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the
too
part
early,
that
Frank.
We talked about, we talked about last week, before, once we get through with the standings, let's go to the West, and you've got Edmonton, who are 2-0, and they're in first, Calgary Roughnecks and Vancouver Stealth tied for second, 1-1, and the Colorado Mammoth are at 1-3. And we just talked about the two games that Colorado will be playing, which could level them at, you know, 3-3. And you know, I right now, the first question one has is that Edmonton has really, no pun intended, have come out with a rush this season.
Ba-dum-bum.
There you go. And they have, though, pun intended.
No, the Edmonton Rush have been a really pleasant surprise. I mean, they've been getting better year over year over year. Now they're getting to the point where people will have to start taking them seriously. When they first joined the league, pardon the phrase, they were considered the weak sisters. Now they're looking like a team that you really don't want to tangle with. It's like poking the bear. If you wake it up, you're in trouble. And the way that they absolutely took Colorado to pieces last weekend is ample proof of that.
And Vancouver is a team that's new and not bad for a fresh start.
This is true. It's a bit of a reboot for them. The numbers were rather dismal in Washington where they were before. So the chance to move the franchise to where they did, while it's a little bit outside Vancouver proper, it's a good start for them, and it's a good way for them to reinvent themselves.
John, Western Division?
Don't ask me on that one. I accept you ignore me on this.
Oh,
passed on
see,
it.
How am I supposed? I got to guess. You see, and I guessed wrong both times. This time, I guess that you might have.
I know.
To say.
You guessed wrong both times because I'm just a friendly, you know, rock caller. You know, I'm not your. You know, detailed info, intel guy like Aaron or Gary. I'm just calling in, talking about my rock team. That's who I am. I got nothing on the West. I just follow the Rock in the East. It's hard to get into the West when, and this is probably, I'm going to vent a little bit, not enough airtime, okay? I don't hear anything about the West. I don't even see it being covered on our TSN or the Score or anything like that here in Toronto in the East. It's sad. So it's hard for me to comment. I just don't get anything filtered through any of these sports shows or anything like that regarding any of the West teams. We barely get anything on media coverage here, on the sports coverage about the Rock. So for that reason, I got to bow out on that one.
Well, there's a really easy way to fix that, though. If you're not getting enough lacrosse, you can always go to NLL.com, and you can just click on the watch link beside their scheduled games. Or you can go to the Lacrosse Network on YouTube, and they've got all the games archived there, so you can watch whichever ones you want. That way you can...
Perfect segue. You see?
That way you can soak up a little
info?
Bit more of the West.
There you go. Okay. Now I'm going to tune in. So maybe next week I'll have some more intel on the West. Frank, how's that?
Well, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Well done, sir.
Okay, so the West, you know, I was going to say about the West and what the West has to offer is one less team. And we speculated last week, and we're not giving up any secrets. Nobody's told us anything. So this is clearly only speculation. And the speculation is such that...
Hey! You guys ever think a lacrosse stick up your ass?
Oh, no. How's
Fuck
it going?
You. Fuck you, bitch.
Wow. That was nice.
That was interesting.
Must be a Ticat fan. Must be a Ticat fan, Frank.
That's all right. I still got them all. I think I'll phone them on Skype. Anyway,
hey,
what I was going to say was...
Hey, man, you got a lacrosse stick up your ass.
That,
yeah, I do.
That,
I want to hear my voice on the air. All right, I heard it. See you later, guys.
Okay, so basically, what we have is a Western Division that only has four teams, Aaron, right?
Yeah.
And we discussed this last week, where there are five teams in the East, and it's quite possible that there might be a team coming in. They're setting it up so that a Western team is going to join, because it didn't make sense to me. I don't know about you, but it didn't make sense to me to put Minnesota in the Eastern Division. What do you think?
No, I mean, it seemed a little odd, to be honest. I know Minnesota is close to geographical center, and it did make more sense to keep them in the West. But if they're looking to even up the divisions a little bit, obviously they're not going to bring in a team in Boston where that failed so recently. Chicago is probably not going to be coming back. You can't look at Baltimore or Pittsburgh or Detroit or anywhere else they've traditionally had teams. So at this point, I guess really the only possibility left for realistic expectations is going to be the West Coast.
And Seattle in particular. And Seattle in particular.
Well, my guess, and I could be wrong, but would be Seattle. If the Supersonics are coming back, then it would
make
sense.
And if the NHL team's going in there.
Yeah,
and
it would make to come in with as many sports teams as possible to pack the schedule for the arena. That way you won't have to rely on concerts or conventions or other events. You can put a hockey team in there, a basketball team, and a lacrosse team, because the scheduling is pretty consistent. You know, you're not at the whim of whoever happens to be touring. So that would be
right.
If I were to do it, that's the way I would.
The two leagues are mirroring each other. The NHL has two more Eastern teams. They're short two Western teams to balance the league. So that tells me they're inviting at least one Western Division team into the hockey's Western Division. And this is the same. You've got one less team in the West in the NLL, and that begs the thought that maybe they're bringing in a team like Seattle. Now, Seattle has a pretty rich history across, doesn't it?
Well, because they are as close to the border as they are, I guess they do. I really need to read up more on that area, especially if there's going to be a team going in, obviously, probably in 2015 or 2016, whenever the NHL and the NBA come to Seattle or come back to Seattle. But being on the West Coast as it is, I think there is at least some history there.
John, you have any opinions on why the league would put Minnesota, which is really traditionally a Western Division team, in the East Division? We think it's because they're going to expand and they're going to add a Western team that's further west than Minnesota. What do you think?
I'm probably going to go on the assumption that the management there said that their costs are too much. The travel costs going out to the West are just not feasible to them, and perhaps because of the fact that they're going to put another team in the East or in the West, and they want to even it out beforehand. But Minnesota's in one of those, you know, tough places, right in the middle. I think if you look at the geographical point of view, you got to go a little bit farther as far as the fuel mileage goes when you got to go and play the West Coast team. So I'm going to go by the. They just feel like more like a East team than they do. There is no Midwest division, is there? Or mid?
No. It's either West. But I assure you, John,
they're a lot closer.
I'm sure. I'm positive of this. They're a lot closer to the Western teams than they are to the Eastern teams, in my opinion.
No.
I
know my geography pretty good, and I'm pretty sure if you're talking about cities like what Colorado and Seattle? No? Or Vancouver?
Well, no. Vancouver,
Calgary,
and Edmonton aren't far from Minnesota, but it doesn't matter. The point is, when I say geographically, for the most part, because the population is heavier on the eastern seaboard than it is the western seaboard, in historically speaking, the only city that's iffy east or west for me has always been and will always be Chicago, which is east of Minnesota.
You're right. How about if I clarify
that, that's
this way?
That's the city to me that geographically and populace-wise, can go either way. In fact, it is, and it just happens to be that's where it is. But the point is, John, that if they bring another team in, and it happens to be because we believe it's Seattle, it would make sense to have Minnesota because it's further east than anybody else of the other four teams, or fifth if one comes in. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it is what it is. Is that you, Aaron?
No, I'm still here. I'm just wondering if maybe we have...
Okay, so that's... John, I heard John, but then I heard click, click, like maybe our friend was back. No. All right.
Doug Lewis calling me on the other line, Frank. Sorry, I told him I'm on the air. He goes, oh, sorry.
There you go. Good for him.
He should be listening. He would know, right?
Last week we talked about various players, and Adam Jones was in second last week. He had a good week this week. He leads the league with 18 points. Dane Smith, Kyle Buchanan, and John Grant Jr. have 17 each. What do you think of the points race, Aaron, so far?
Well, it's shaping up to be exciting. I'll give it that much. You just mentioned Adam, Dane, and Kyle. John Grant Jr. is up there with 17. Drew Westervelt is up there with 15. Jordan Hall from Philadelphia is up there with 14. Garrett Billings is sitting there with 14 as well. Now, one of the things you have to remember, though, Adam Jones is sitting in first right now after having played four games. Dane Smith and Kyle Buchanan are both sitting in second and third, both having played three games. Grant and Drew Westervelt are both sitting there in fourth and fifth, having played four games. Garrett's only played two.
So because it's early in the season. One more game in a four-game season means a lot. That's 25% more opportunity to pile up points. But still, Adam Jones is a great player, and he sits in first. We'll give him that luxury. The only other way to resolve this is what we're going to have to do is get out the old calculator and help the NLL by dividing, create a points per game thing. Maybe we'll do that from now on, Aaron, just so we get a clearer, understanding of how well the players are doing. And then it'll get factored in with how many times they get injured and how many games they miss. So, for now, the standings for points, that's what it is. And the Mammoth have the leading score. Yes, he's played more games, but still they have the leading score. The goal leader as well, same pitcher, same guy, 11. Same reason he's ahead, same advantage he has. He leads the league with 11 goals. Drew Westervelt has 9. Steven LeBlanc, Jeff Shatler, and Zach Greer have 8 apiece. The advantage goes to him in that regard. I like Jeff Shatler myself. Who do you see in there that is a real contender for scoring goals?
Well, for the scoring title, I'm looking at Mark Matthews. I'm looking at Garrett Billings. I'm looking at the perennial favorite, John Tavares. Dan Dawson's always been relatively close to the top. He's had a bit of a slow start with Rochester. He's only got 12 points. That's 5 goals and 7 assists. Cody Jamison is also somebody to be reckoned with on Rochester as well. He's a little bit further down the list with 3 goals and 8 assists. But all of those guys have the ability to be top 10. So
Rochester as well has a pretty balanced attack, which is pretty much the reason why they won the championship. They don't really rely on anybody. And this is one of John's favorites. In football, you have a quarterback or a team that doesn't play well, and certain players look good because they're playing catch-up all the time and they're relying on a player to score. John, what do you think of leadership when it comes to scoring and assists and that kind of stuff? What can a player offer his team? Is it all just about scoring?
No, I mean, you know, it's about how a leader in a dressing room wants to unite everybody, who knows how to, you know, speak to each individual, you know, at their kind of level. Every guy has got a different bond with each other. No one has got the same joke methods or frame of mind or whatever. So when you got a Doyle in there and knows how to control the room and knows how to get to each person as a friend first and then as a player, that's what's really, it's the chemistry in the room. You know, sometimes you might not have the best talent, but when a room is gelling together as a, you know, one unit, you can see what happens. We see examples of it in other sports, right? Teams that don't have the best talent but come out on top. And guys, my phone is dying out. I'm not sure if you hear the beeping at the other end. I love to stay on longer, but I'm going to die out. And Aaron, great info again all night tonight. Frank, all right, half and half. You forgot.
Don, one last shout out before you go. Go to the Toronto Rocks web channel and try to check out their best bromance video from today.
Okay.
From their practice, they're asking about the best bromances on the team. You'll see.
Oh,
all right.
God.
Hey, and give me that phone number for The Rock again to call. I didn't get it down on paper.
No worries. Okay, now you're looking to pick up tickets, right?
Right.
Okay. Give me just a second here. Unfortunately, I don't actually have it right on my phone right in front of me right now. I got to wait for my phone.
I know you guys will get it before the show ends. Frank, thank you very much. Aaron, everybody else, have a good night.
John,
The Rock,
John,
all the way, guys. Take
care.
There's
prorated season tickets. There's the January 31st tickets, which is the next game. There's the season's pass for $99. And let me say this. It will be fun if you go to the game. Yes. Yeah, well, again, John's a big Rock fan, so, you know, he insists on always making sure we're plugging the Rock. And I'll remind you, folks, you go to NLL.com, and you can, or you go to TorontoRock.com, you can purchase tickets. And just because John's asking, the number is 416-596-3075, or tickets at TorontoRock.com. As I said. And to give you an indication of what the prices are, adults are in the platinum section are $69, seniors are $69, youth are $25. In the gold section, adults are $59, seniors $49, youth $25. The end gold, $49, senior $44, youth $25. The red section, $45 for the adult, $41 for the senior, $25 for the youth. And the end reds are $41 for the adult, $35 for the senior, and $25 for the youth. Now, as I said, you can go to each team, and you will be pleasantly surprised that the cost is not that expensive, and you can have a real fun time with the family. And as The Rock do, they charge basically a flat price of $25 for all the kids that show up. It doesn't matter where you sit. So if you buy, it depends on where the adult wants to sit. There's also, a holiday pack. You get two games, six tickets, two pairs of mitts, and it's a great offer for $140. So you know, be prepared to have fun and get real excited when it comes to The Rock and the other teams, of course. Aaron, I was in the middle of...
I wanted to add one thing to that, Frank, as well.
Oh.
If you purchase a prorated season ticket by January 31st, you could win a chance. You could have a chance to win a trip for two to Las Vegas, courtesy of Adventure House Travel, with flights provided by Air Canada. The trip includes round-trip airfare for two from Toronto to Las Vegas, airport transfers, and accommodations for three nights in Vegas. So if you purchase a prorated season ticket by January 31st, you could have the chance to win a trip for two to Vegas.
All right. Now, since we don't have commercials, we'll get them. We'll get them from the. I know what John's getting at. John loves to push commercials, and I totally appreciate his intensity. Once we start getting our associations with the teams, we won't have a problem playing any of the commercials or any of the information that you need to know to be a fan and to be right there behind the glass or behind a seat somewhere and having a great time. We will, in fact, give you that information as soon as we. Have it available to us. As I said, this is a relationship on our third show that we're building with the NLL, and hopefully next week we might have a Calgary Roughneck player to talk to. That's my hope, anyway. I don't know about you. All right. Who else do we have on the phone here?
Hey, what's up, Frank? This is Mike.
hey, Mike, how's it going? We're talking lacrosse right now. You know that.
Right, man. I just called to support the lacrosse show. That's all. I can learn a little bit more by listening to you guys.
Okay, good. Thank you, sir. All right. Have you ever seen a lacrosse game?
Yeah, I've seen – well, actually, Detroit had a team some years ago, an indoor lacrosse team that played downtown, and I've seen a couple of games that they showed on TV. I actually kind of like it, personally.
Yeah, the team is called the Turbos. I don't know how many games you caught there, Mike, but there was one game where the Turbos were playing the Philadelphia Wings, and players started going into the crowd, and they turned off the lights and turned the lights back on, and the players were still fighting.
I remember that fight, too. I remember that.
So, Mike, what city are you in again? Sorry.
I'm Detroit, Michigan. Well, I live in Detroit, but right now I'm in Mississippi right now.
Okay. No, that's cool. I'm just trying to think because I remember there's also the summer leagues. I don't know how often you border hop, but I'm trying to remember if there's a senior B team or not that plays out in your neck of the wood.
Okay.
And I'll see if maybe I can't get some more info for you if you're interested in going to a summer game.
Hey, I love ball sports. I go to anything, man. I go to a volleyball game.
All right. So we left off with the goals leaders, and you mentioned Garrett Billings, Aaron. That looks like he'll have another good year. So far, he's leading the league in assists with 13. Behind him with 11 are Dane Smith, John Grant Jr., and Kyle Buchanan and Sean Evans with 10 apiece. Assist leaders in box lacrosse, are they usually the more experienced players?
They're usually players that have been around the league for a little bit longer, yes.
And the intricacy of understanding what a good goal-scoring position is the reason why.
Exactly. They're better able to read the floor and feed the players that are best able to capitalize on it.
All right. Is there anybody in particular other than Garrett Billings, that you feel, is an up-and-coming assist guy who's developing that experience we just spoke of?
Well, there's Alex Geich in Vancouver.
A guy to look out for.
Last week, Alex, and I apologize for that. His last name is spelled G-A-J-I-C. It's actually pronounced Geich.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Got
9 assists. Kevin Crowley's been consistent when it comes to assists. Sean Evans is a good setup man. Same goes for Kyle and John Grant. But you can't cut out some of the older guard like Josh Sanderson and John Tavares. Those two guys are remarkably consistent for the most part. Ryan Benesch has been another bit of a pleasant surprise. He's had a really balanced scoring attack this year. He's got 6 goals and 7 assists for 13 points. He used to be with the Rock, but they parted their ways. They parted ways a few years back. But he's always been a remarkably consistent point getter as well.
All right. Now there are statistics that don't. Every league has their own statistics that make them a little different than another league. I think this next statistic, which is the loose ball leaders. It's a statistic peculiar to lacrosse, even though, in football they have, turnovers, right? But with loose balls, there are so many. For example, Bob Snyder leads the league with 53 loose balls. In lacrosse, the ball doesn't change hands that often. But when the opportunity arises, if you can do that, you can really change the momentum in the game, can't you?
Most definitely you can. It's one of the quickest and easiest ways to turn around the game is to get the ball more times than your opponent. The more touches you have, the better off you are. So if you've got a guy like Bob Snyder, or you've got a guy like Jay Thornburg, or a guy like Jeff Snyder playing for Calgary, who's got 31 so far, these guys are going to turn around the game for you. Granted, and again, Bob's. We really do need to get a sort of a stats per game Excel spreadsheet set up because Bob's done that with 4 games. Jay Thornburg with Buffalo's had 40 over 3. Garrett's had 23 over 2, that sort of thing. But
I mean,
the ability to get the ball is highly underestimated in this sport. I don't think enough emphasis is often placed on the ability to hoover that thing up.
Yeah, so far what I'm understanding from just what you said, quick math, you know, which means I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. You know, they're in and around 10 to 12, 13 loose balls a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, so whether you get 10 a game or 13 a game will determine whether you lead the league. But still, a good game for a guy is about 10, 11, maybe 12 loose balls. That's
right.
A good game for a guy.
Pretty much.
So to put it in perspective for the listeners. Now, this is another stat that's very important in lacrosse. Again, for the same reason. A loose ball is a ball that someone had and now it's up for grabs. The same is true with a face-off. It basically dictates someone's going to get the ball, and 66 face-off wins for Bob Snyder. That's pretty impressive.
Most definitely. Now, with him running at a percentage right now of 61.1%, that puts him at the top of the league. There are a couple players that are going to have higher percentages than him, but that's only because they've only taken one draw and they happen to have won it. So if you look at guys like Snyder, you look at guys like Jay Thornburg in Buffalo, Tistabile in Philly, Snyder in Calgary, Evans in Rochester, and Thompson in Edmonton, these are the guys that will go a long way towards getting your team the wins. You know, possession off the faceoff is key. We've seen players score off the faceoff. Jesse Gamble had a goal called back a couple games ago and also scored one right off the faceoff. I think it was right at the start of the third quarter against Calgary. 10 seconds into the quarter because he got the ball off the draw from Stephen Horry, went in and potted one. Like that, that's huge.
We have another caller in the room. Hello?
Is he on mute?
Hello? No, he's not on mute. Hello? Well, okay, he or she may not have realized that they could actually be heard on the air. Okay, well, they might come back and we'll give them a chance. Take a chance. That's what we're here for. Now, this is something, you know, hockey fans are very accustomed to. Penalty minutes leaders. Now, usually penalty minutes are a function of fighting because, you know, you get 5 minutes for fighting and two for, you know, for slashing or whatever. So, you know, it takes a couple of slashes, you know, three slashes to outdo yourself. You know, so usually fighters have the biggest amount of minutes. So for The Rock, they have Craig Englund. Is he a tough guy?
He's a really hard-nosed and solid defender. That's what I can definitely say about him. I mean, he picked up 12 minutes against Calgary in their home opener on January 3rd. But that's, you know, that just happened to fall out that way. I'll be honest with you, I don't even recall what he got them for.
There you go.
He might even have been their in-home player. I think he was their in-home player that game.
What I mean
when I say the in-home player is he's the player that sits at the get a bench minor.
Because
I don't recall him getting into any fights that game.
And but he ended up with a lot of penalty minutes.
He ended up with 12 penalty minutes, but I don't recall him ever getting into, like, I don't recall him getting into a fight. I'm just going to pull up the box score here and just see what I can see. If you want to just give me a second to do that, Frank.
Go ahead. While you do that, I'll try again. Our number four listener calling from a 714 area code. It's one way to listen to the program by doing that. So we welcome you on the air. Is that you, Mike, making that noise, or was it him?
I think that's Chris.
Okay.
Chris Jones? To support the show tonight. Yes, Chris Jones. Christopher Jones.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
We both just called in to support the show tonight. That's all.
That's very we appreciate that. All right, so...
Hey, no problem.
He didn't say anything. That's the only reason why I asked. So when it comes to lacrosse and we talk about fighting while Aaron does some research, the thing about lacrosse fighting is the guys are standing on solid ground in running shoes, not on skates, you know, sliding and slipping a little bit. So, you know, it's a little bit tougher fighting in lacrosse than it is in hockey. Now, a lot of times they tend to keep their gloves on, which I think is a smart thing to do, considering they're all wearing cages or shields. You know, nowadays, you know, more and more, we talked earlier in the program how protection is advancing. And also areas that weren't protected before are now being protected more and more. So the fighting lacrosse is pretty tough stuff. It's not very easy. We'll move on to the power play goals. And Kevin Crowley leads the league with 3 power play goals. He's followed by Jordan Hall and Colin Doyle, a well-known name, Jeff Shatler, and Adam Jones. They actually all have 3 power play goals. We're early in the season, so those statistics, the gap will be created. Right now there is no gap. Also, the shots on goal, John Grant Jr. leads with 41. Adam Jones has 38. Kevin Crowley has 31. Drew Westervelt has 29. And Dane Smith has 26. Now, when it comes to shots on goal in lacrosse, it's a lot different than hockey or most sports, because you can literally carry the ball. In fact, one player in Europe scored a goal by carrying the puck with his hockey stick, and it created a real, real thing on YouTube. Well, this happens all the time in lacrosse, and this is what a goalie has to contend with. They have to contend with shots that can come from anywhere, as low, just draw, you know, wind your arm around, and that's where the ball can come from. It can come from anywhere. Now, forced turnovers, this is a statistic that I like because of what it means. You've got guys like Adam Jones, who we talk about him as a goal scorer. It is a function of the quickness that some of these players have. Jones has 8. Jeff Snyder has 6, along with Bob Snyder. Brett Medeski has 5, as well as Kyle Rubish. So, you know, these are the guys that are physical. You'll watch them as they hammer away at the stick and the arm to create a situation where the ball pops loose and then basically get a hold of it. This is a lot of work to get this to happen. You have to run a lot. It's a physically demanding statistic, if you will. Now, the wins leaders for goalies, Anthony Cosmo leads with 2. Matt Vince, 2 as well. Aaron Bold, 2. Evan Kirk and Nick Rose each have won 1 game. Now, what we have also, the goals against average. Now, I say 7.5, and we're talking, you know, real minor league in hockey. But 7.5 is leading the league. Matt Vince is doing that. Aaron Bold, Tyler Carlson have 8, and Tyler Richards, 9. And Dylan Ward, 10.80.
The saves leaders. Don't get misled by these statistics either.
Yeah,
you
can jump in now, Aaron, now that you're ready. If we went over the power play goals, you got a comment on the power play. The penalty minutes was where we left off. So what did you want to say about the penalty?
I was looking at what happened with Mr. England and his penalty. He was assessed a 5-minute penalty in the game against Buffalo. The other penalty that he got was actually a 10-minute match, a 10-minute game misconduct. Right at the end of the Calgary-Toronto home opener.
And that's where all the time comes in. A major, and a 10-minute misconduct, adding up to 17.
Exactly. Now, jumping ahead to team defense here, the goals against average that you're looking at here, Ty Bélanger's got one of the worst in the league, unfortunately, because he was on the wrong end of that 17-6 loss. Mike Poulin has been on the wrong end just because he gave up 16 in the first game to Toronto. Cosmo has been actually pretty rock solid, despite the fact that he's up around 4.42. He's played extremely well to get there. He's also played, I think, more minutes than anybody else in the league. So once you see other people's minute totals start to come up, their goals against average is going to balance out as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that's obviously had the best so far has been Matt Vince with Rochester. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got the 2 wins under his belt, and he's sitting there with a 7.5, and you can't really complain about that. He's always been a very solid goaltender. He's always been a very technical goaltender. This just bears that out.
And he's done it with not many shots against, you know?
Exactly.
Which might be hard to do.
You know, that's the other thing, you know. He's got a rock-solid defense in front of him. And he's only faced 92 shots, but it's because his defense in front of him has been so limiting that that helps keep his goals against average down as well.
There you go. And I guess in the opposite end of the spectrum that we just referred to, you've got Anthony Cosmo, who's faced 133 shots. I was just mentioning Evan Kirk, 105, Dylan Ward, 86, Nick Rose, 83, Mike Poulin, 79. You know,
well, those are the saves that they've made.
Yeah,
if you want
those are the saves.
On goal,
yeah.
I'd check out the SOG column. Cosmo's actually faced 167 shots.
Sorry, the saves, yes, the saves they made. I must have misspoke. Okay.
Yeah,
those are the saves that they've made. That's, you know, just basically tells you how many shots they've stopped, which may or may not be, you know, an inordinate amount. But at the end of the day, goaltenders, there's a certain, you know, we're watching right now a season with the Leafs where they have goaltenders that their goaltenders are getting upwards of, I think today, I think I heard before the Buffalo game, they had some 20 games, which is about, almost half the season, just a little under half the season, they've allowed 38 plus shots a game, which an average for a team is around 31, 32, you know. So, you know, a lot of times, because you get a lot of shots, your percentage may be high, may be low, but it really speaks to how a goaltender can handle a lot of shots or how a goaltender can handle too few. I think both are just as difficult. What about you?
No, you know what? There's a balance to be struck, and the problem is you can get caught napping far too often if your team's defense is just too good, quote unquote. I don't know how that's possible because I still see shots.
You could try,
you know.
You could try,
but yeah, no. There is always that danger, you know, of falling asleep at the switch, and it has happened to goalies before, so. It's just something to be aware of.
Okay. Now, here's something I want you to explain to me. I know it's simple, and I'll probably feel like a dummy for asking. But explain to me LAX 101.
Oh, you mean the section that they have?
Yeah.
What's
explain to the folks what LAX is all about.
Well, box lacrosse, very, very simple goal. Take the little white thing and put it in the black mesh thing on the other side of the floor. So just like hockey is put the puck in the net, lacrosse is put the ball in the net. It's how you do it that starts to get interesting. Because lacrosse is run on a 30-second shot clock. Now, you've got 8 seconds to get the ball from your side of the floor over the halfway mark. If you don't do that, you lose possession of the ball. Once you've got it over, you've got the rest of that 30-second shot clock to actually get a shot on goal. So like basketball, you've got 24 seconds to make a hoop. In lacrosse, you've got 30 seconds to do that. But the whole LAX 101 section is basically designed to tell you, give you a general overview of the game, how the game is supposed to run, and also give you the slang terms or the what they call the terms of the turf. Now, I mean, obviously, most of it is fairly even and simple stuff, like a body check.
Well, let's start with this here. You mentioned about, you know, LAX 101 is an introduction to the National Lacrosse League and the great game of professional indoor lacrosse. We hope you find this section helpful in your introduction to the professional indoor game. Some of the basic NLL rules, which I'll add to what you mentioned, the rosters include a 20-man roster. Each team dresses 20 players for the game. You have 18 runners and 2 goalies. Now, when, you know, runners is just another way of saying players, okay? A team shall be composed of 6 players on the floor, 5 runners, and 1 goalie. The time format is 4 15-minute quarters, which people are accustomed to, 2 minutes between quarters, 12-minute halftime. Timeouts, each team may take 2 45-second timeouts per half. A TV game has 1 timeout per half. Sudden death overtime, games ending regulation play with the tie score are decided by a sudden death overtime period. Play continues until a goal is scored. More than 1 overtime period is played if necessary. 8-second violation occurs when a team on offense fails to advance the ball past the midfield within 8 seconds after taking possession at their end. So sometimes in transition, you recover the ball in the corner. You've got 8 seconds to take it out of the zone. But what happens is the team that loses the ball runs off the floor and puts out their defenders. basically, you shouldn't have any difficulty getting out of your zone in 8 seconds, right, Aaron?
Well, it all depends on the forecheck, but no, technically you shouldn't. You should be able to move the ball up fast enough up the floor that the 8 seconds isn't going to matter.
There you go. It's a call that you rarely see, right? But it's there for a reason.
Yeah. It speeds up the game. It's moving.
Yeah, to determine possessions at the start of each quarter and after every goal, two players face their sticks at midfield with the referee placing the ball between the heads of the sticks. Now, that's a face-off. We referred to some of the face-off winners. And the shot clock that Aaron mentioned, a 30-second shot clock, begins counting down when a team assumes possession of the ball. The offensive team must put a shot on goal during that time or they will lose possession. If they do shoot on goal without scoring and recover possession of the ball via rebound, loose ball, or ball recovery, the clock is reset for a new 30 seconds. And then you were referring to all the terms of the turf and all that kind of stuff. A body check, that's pretty easy to understand. It's basically contact. Breakaway is one-on-one with obviously the runner, if you will, going in on goal. This one here. Some cradle better than others. If Aaron and I would play, I would hardly ever cradle the ball because I wouldn't be sure which end of the head should be up or down. So, you know, I'm just kidding.
Most of the terms are readily familiar. Everybody knows what a crease is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody who watches hockey will know what a cross check is. The hidden ball play.
Now, stop there. Stop there. Now,
yeah.
Everybody knows what a cross check is. But, you know, in hockey, there's a gray area with cross checking. But I think it's even grayer in lacrosse. What constitutes?
Well, that is
true. We see legal. What we would think would be cross-checking in hockey, even when the referee's blind, would be cross-checking in hockey. But in lacrosse, it is not. What makes a cross-check a penalty in lacrosse?
Well, generally when it draws blood, that's as a general rule of thumb. No, but anything over the shoulder and below the waist, anywhere that a player is not sufficiently padded. So
okay.
Or the head. Exactly. Cross-checks the head are a no-no.
Yep. So that's but cross-checking is a legal tactic in lacrosse when done within the rules, which you described right now. Whereas in hockey, cross-checking, when you say cross-checking, that's a penalty. There is no good cross check in hockey. It's a penalty. Now, a hidden ball play. The player without the ball cradles a stick, drawing the attention of the defense, while a teammate who has the ball passes or shoots on net.
Yeah, this
now,
is like those old fakeroos. You've
right.
got one guy who's swinging his stick around madly, so it looks like he's got the ball, whereas somebody else sneaks down the side.
I thought you were finished.
Go ahead.
Finish it up. Okay. A loose ball is what it says. Basically occurs when there is no possession. The ball is bouncing, rolling, or rebounding off the board or the goaltender. So any ball that is free, pretty simple, it's a loose ball. A major penalty is 5 minutes in the penalty box for infractions such as, and this is taken seriously, high sticking, boarding, face masking, fighting, and spearing. And those are all, not part of the game, and the penalties are meant to take them out of the game. Man down, when a team has one less player on the floor than their opponent. Now, the man down usually occurs when there's a penalty.
Exactly.
So, those are some of the rules. We're down to the last minute and a half, and I really do appreciate, Aaron, your contribution, as I do John Granger's contribution. Gary Grube, I know you're out there you're napping right now, but in your dreams, I know what he's dreaming. He's dreaming for a Rock win the next time out. I wish him the best as well. And my two football buddies are here. Mike Townsend, he spoke. Christopher Jones silently sits listening and appreciating the game of lacrosse. He is planning on going to Langley to watch a Vancouver Stealth game sometime soon. And I hope he tells us what the experience was like when he finally does go. Mike Townsend gets around. Right now, as he said, he's in Mississippi. He's a truck driver, and he's one of my football buddies with the CFL show. And thank you guys for being on again. And Aaron, as always, a big pleasure working with you. Any final comments? I'll give you 10, 15 seconds to throw something out there.
just keep your eyes on the standings and watch how they're going to change over the next couple of weeks. Give it another weekend, and we should have a slightly more solid look at the league. Once all the teams have about five or six games under their belt, the playoff picture is going to start to emerge, and it's going to be a humdinger this year.
Yeah, it truly will. And for those of you that have joined us here on Candid Frank Live, this has been the NLL show talking about National League Lacrosse. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next Wednesday on the 22nd of January from 9 till 11 p.m. on Wednesdays. Thanks for tuning in. For everyone, have a great one, everyone. Bye.